For 43 years, the 1.5-centimeter berry-like sac has been nestled in Samantha Hennard's brain, like an exclamation point curled into a comma, waiting for the end of the sentence. Everyone is gone, her husband, her son, and since yesterday afternoon, without any warning, her daughter has disappeared too. As Sam waits for Marguerite to return, because she will return, because really there is no other option, her eyelid flutters. Flutter, flutter, it's been fluttering all morning. From nerves, she assumes. To calm herself, she looks out the window to what she calls the life-saving view, the stubbly Rhode Island fields and fields and fields that lead to the distant sliver that is the ocean. The farmer's son and another boy are out in one of the fields baling hay, and they look up to where Sam leans out of the window. In adulthood, she has emerged from a mousy girl shell to be the kind of woman who stops the wandering gaze of men, and with her hair pulled back, what her husband once called her revelatory forehead is revealed. A revelation of beauty, he said, placing his palm there delicately, deliberately, as if her forehead was a holy relic, and Bernard was divining something, but that was years and years ago. Sam appreciates that the farmer's son, upon seeing her, raises a hand in hello as if she were a normal woman. Sam's daughter, Marguerite Hennard, will not be back today. She's searching for her heart in Queens. She believes her 18-year-old heart, strong enough, tough enough, is in a jar somewhere. She can hear it thumping against thick jelly jar glass. Up and down the up and down hall she shuffles, searching for her thump-thump heart, pressing her ear into door after door, though the morning women have told her not to. The morning women who Marguerite first met in the morning, but then there they were in the afternoon and the evening too, and so she knew they were not women who came in the morning, but morning women. The morning women tell Marguerite not to lean her ear against the doors because there are germs. According to the shorter morning woman, there are germs everywhere, which is kind of funny, germs in a hospital. Germs on the doors, germs on the floor, germs on the walls, the shorter morning woman says, germs everywhere. And in this kind of hospital, Marguerite's roommate Regina says, there are germs on the mind. She skates by on legs bruised from kicking herself. But if finding her heart means getting ear germs, then Marguerite will get germs in her ears, because above all, at the very top of the musty pile of muss, she must find her heart and have it ready for her brother when he comes to carry it to its final resting place. Suddenly, in the overhead sky of the indoor world, paging Dr. Goodman, florid mania, Dr. Goodman says, is like a flower bursting. Paging Dr. Good, man, and Marguerite is hopeful, up and down, an ear pressed to every door. Marguerite's brother, Ryan Hennard, isn't on his way to find her heart because he doesn't know it's missing. He doesn't even know Marguerite is missing because he has been gone 3 weeks, longer than anyone. He's in San Francisco, sitting at a wobbly thrift store table, one of its legs propped up by the yellow pages. He's in an apartment not his own in the Mission, across from a woman elaborate with tattoos, lines and squiggles that were indecipherable when he was having sex with her in the dark last night. With a second cup of coffee, the tattoos become more legible, thorns with drops of blood, an anchor, Jesus on a cross wearing a dress. Where did you say you were from? The woman asks. The woman's pointed question threatens to turn a perfectly enjoyable one-night stand into an interrogation, and Ryan is late for his job as a long-term temp. Are you gonna answer me? The woman puts her toes in the cuff of Ryan's pants and jiggles her foot. What are you, mute? She kicks him. Something like that, he says. People should be tattooed by love, Ryan thinks, as this woman waits for an answer, although Ryan suspects that no answer will satisfy her. Love should leave a mark on the body, carve itself into different shapes, but he isn't thinking of this woman. He's thinking of Marguerite, whose love has tattooed his heart with something that Ryan imagines looks like the snake that winds its way up the woman's arm. The snake that is right now reaching out across the worn, scratched surface at the wobbling table for a carton of milk whose expiration date is a week ago. Whatever, the woman says finally, standing to readjust her robe, opening it briefly to reveal a tattooed flower over her left breast. And then shit, Ryan remembers that all of this love tattoo bullshit is something his mother once said to him, and Jesus, was he so pathetic that he was recycling thoughts of his mother's? A woman who the last time he spoke to her was touting the benefits of some freaky Quaker medicinal treatment that involved taking baths all day long. A woman who was using this quack treatment to cure whatever it was she thought ailed his sister. If she had asked Ryan, and no one ever did, the long-term effects of parents like she and Bernard weren't going to be washed away by any bath, no matter how long you soaked. Ryan pulls the woman's calf, rough with razor stubble, up onto his leg and traces the anchor. He lets his relief at being states and states and states away from his parents run through his finger to this calf in front of him. He can see in this woman's eyes the way relief is being interpreted as something deeper. How did Bernard Henard end up in a dark diner somewhere on a back road in Virginia, shades drawn to keep the bright light of noon from mocking the digitus? He's lost track, driving and driving for the last 3 days, ever since he walked in on Sam with that pseudo-Benedictine hippie-porn carpenter who came to make the bathroom over, according to some Quaker code of bathtub ritual. Sam perched on the rim of that continuous bathtub of hers, legs spread, bracing herself with one arm against the wall and the hippie porn carpenter on his knees, his limp blonde head of hair between Sam's thighs while their daughter slept, waterlogged in a nearby room. Bernard's been driving from one small town to the next, trying to shake that image, staring out the windows of dark motel rooms that smell of stale cigarette smoke. In the morning, he wakes up with quilts scarred with tiny round cigarette-burned holes scratching his face. He's been trying to abandon not only that image, but time itself, the weeks, the months, the years, and the rest of the calendar. He keeps the shades drawn in an effort to outsmart time, but it refuses to be outsmarted, and eventually he remembers he's 59 and his wife is having an affair, his son left home and it's Bernard's fault, and his daughter's skin, which used to glow from the inside out, grows prunier and prunier by the day. He's 59, and not only are all of these things lost to him, he's abandoned the material for the research project that has meant more to him than anything in years, an essay by a German doctor on the stigmata and ecstasies of the 19th century Belgian mystic Louise Lateau. He's left it on the back of a rest stop toilet. No matter how quickly Bernard drives or how much bad TV he watches, there's also no shaking his wife's voice rattling in his head since he left Rhode Island. Sometimes Sam's voice rails against the way he disappeared into his research. If it makes you feel better to keep calling her research, more power to you, but I prefer to call the bleeding Belgian what she is, a reality substitute. Sometimes her voice rails against his leaving. Here's the part where, after everything that's happened, you take off into the wild blue yonder. In rarer moments, Sam's voice waxes nostalgic. For this version of her voice, Bernard would endure any number of rants. Humble then your wisdom, which is based on reason, and place all your fidelity in those things which are given by love and illuminated through faith, Sam says, quoting Marguerite's namesake, Marguerite Poiret. Bernard's head is in his hands as he studies a mustard stain on the tabletop, waiting for the waitress to come take his order. Remember that? Sam asks. The kindness in her voice is like a star's light arriving from years and years ago. For this version of Sam, Bernard would give anything.